It's not about feelings. It's not about how adorable of a grandmother you are.
No, it is absolutely about cold, hard numbers. Grams. Kilograms.
Moving buildings. Flying. New things. The river crossing. Oh, no.
Over the sea.
Horses over the sea.
Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones game.
Sean Bean dies.
I'm Red Scott.
And I'm Ivan Hernandez.
This is Boars Going Swords.
No fucking joke, we're the third greatest Great British Bake Off podcast on the motherfucking internet. Is Paul Hollywood still as much of a Great Britain Fieri as he always has been? Does Mary Berry's name sound like it should be a pun, yet it isn't quite one? Does Sue Perkins have the finest collection of blazers this side of any other lesbian I know?
This is a great... long episode you're about to have. Here's the thing. I've mentioned this for an average Game of Thrones episode. I usually have like 1,300 to 1,400 words written down. I've never written this many notes before.
What are you at? Because I'm at four pages, 832 words.
I have 2,200 words
what?
Written down.
How did you write a think piece about this?
I wrote.
Are you going to sell your notes to Salon after this?
I wrote a think piece that they would have had to cut down significantly. They were like, even on the internet, we can't support this kind of byte count. It's going to take our servers down.
My God, even Slate was like, you really need to make your thoughts more concise.
Even Slate was like, maybe you should put this in perspective.
First of all, I'm going to say that Red has once again managed to somehow... This is the first time Red has ever watched Great British Bake Off.
I was waiting.
I thought you were very familiar with this show's format already.
No, I was trying to stay pristine. I knew. I mean, I wasn't surprised by the format. I've spoken to people. I live in society. I know what it is. But first off, we should say that this is the $750 Patreon reward. We are doing this episode for our patrons who have been so gracious as to support us up to the $750 amount. And I'm so excited to be doing this. This is... We're pivoting.
Amazing. This is my favorite thing that we have ever done so far. And this is a great season of this shit, too. This is already a great season of this shit.
So we should say, for now and posterity, we are covering Series 7 of the Great British Bake Off. I have not seen Series 1 through 6. I didn't know who any of these people were. And I knew what the format of the show was, but I was not prepared for the intensity.
And let me tell you, all of these people are so nice and so mellow, yet watching them construct a gingerbread house is one of the most nerve-inducing, just frightful things you can ever watch happen. We're covering the first two episodes. Are we going to do this bi-weekly?
That's what we talked about. Let's see how this episode goes. You guys let us know in the Patreon comments if you think that this is something that would be worth our time for, you know, all like near 300 of you at this point. and if you think it is, I mean, I enjoyed watching this.
You say that as if it's a question that I could even possibly not enjoy this. It has everything I've ever wanted. It has cakes. It has biscuits. It has breads. What else could I want in a show?
This is, I will say this right now, the only R-rated Great British Bake Off podcast you're going to find.
When that fucking gingerbread house fell, I was like, Louise, you piece of shit cunts.
Yeah. Listen, everybody else who's covering this show is going to be like, oh me, oh my, and then say something with a Cockney accent. I don't know what the hell they're doing. We are going to let out the real emotions and address all of the off-color jokes that they are making under the auspices of British euphemisms.
I did not catch the icing on the tits joke that you caught.
Yes!
The first series, this series opens with what I'm going to assume is Sue Perkins making a dildo joke.
Yeah, no, the one that I had was Sue Perkins also. And I was like, what? We'll cover that when we get to that.
This show is the perfect combination of British sensitivity and bodiness.
Oh, man. Sue Perkins, if you're nasty.
Sue Perkins is, let me tell you, that woman is fucking great. A hero of mine. My God, the way she wears those blazers.
Yeah, and those, and they're like, very few people can get off with a white shirt with a colored club collar, and she destroyed that mess in the first episode.
It motherfucking happen. This show is hosted by Sue Perkins and Mel, whose last name I do not quite remember, who are a very established British comedy duo.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah. No, were you like, my God, why are these bakers saying so many off-color jokes?
Yes, I was saying that. And also, I was like, man, Paul Hollywood was basically Kiff from Futurama every time they made a joke about him.
I love Sue's constant insult of fucking Paul Hollywood.
Oh, it's so good.
Nothing makes me happier.
It's so good. And listen, I'm sure this has all been covered territory. We should get into the show. It starts off very twee. There are birds in the background. I'm blushing at this point. I'm so charmed.
they are at the tent, which is
did she call it the tent of dreams at one point? Is that the official name?
I think so. No. I think it might be the dream tent.
It's the tent of dreams.
It is the tent of dreams and nightmares.
The one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life is the initial cake week, Kate week pun riff that they wrote in advance, clearly.
That
is the kind of thing you forgive it if it happens spontaneously. Because, listen, you'd never know if the riff gun's going to backfire. That thing jams all of the time. But when something is so clearly scripted as that, there's no forgiveness.
And I was able to pick up all of those Kates except Garraway. This is going to be a running theme through these podcasts of them making very, very, very specific UK references that we will not get.
I did miss a full quarter of the second episode after she said vacationing in Frizzle, like that was a real place, and then I could not stop laughing.
One of these motherfuckers said Croydon, and I was like, that's a Doctor Who place.
God,
a lot of these are legitimately Doctor Who play.
Right.
Every single competitor on this show looks like a Doctor Who companion.
Oh, for sure.
Single one of them.
I mean, we will have chances to address each and every one of them. What I was not prepared for, because it had been sold to me as sort of a softer, sweeter reality show. So I wasn't prepared. The editing on this is fucking cutthroat. They are showing you like 1 second of action, another second of action, like trying to take notes. At one point, I was just screaming and reading the subtitles as I was trying to type. Like they are covering so much ground so quickly. It is hyper content.
The editing on this show is so fucking precise. They show you so much happening at all times. Oh my God, we're not even getting it. Oh my God, there's so much crazy shit that has happened.
It's like a Candace manufactured gingerbread house. It's that level of precision.
We need to get into that Candace gingerbread house, because I was like, this bitch's house is gonna fucking burn, and she pulled it off.
Oh, man.
She pulled it the fuck off.
She's the person. It's like in gymnastics or ice skating, where like one strategy is to do every trick that is known to the sports, but do it perfectly. And mm-hmm. She's the person who's like, I'm gonna invent my own trick. I'm going to add a full 2 extra spins, more than anybody's ever done before. And if I survive this, I will win by like 3 points. But normally they don't survive.
Oh, but fucking Candace. Boy, does she survive.
Oh, man. So the first challenge that we get. So if I'm to understand the format of the show, there's basically two prepared dishes that they make? I don't know the baking terms.
Recipes
that they make. And then in the middle, the cream of that sandwich is a technical challenge where they don't know what it is in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes, that is pretty much it. The first one is, hey, make this thing. The second is follow either Mary or Paul's recipe. Maybe put your own twist on it. And the third one is go fucking apeshit on this crazy thing.
And one of the weird things about being an American watching it is I so far have not heard of like half of the things that they're making.
When they said Jaffa cakes, I was like, I've literally never seen a Jaffa cake in my fucking life.
Right. I think there's a British cookie called a Tim Tam that's sort of the like mass manufactured version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, you know, they're making the actual one. So I was aware of Tim Tams, and it's the same structure where it's like cookie, jam, chocolate. So I was aware of the form, but didn't realize that they were merely a mass-produced version of the platonic form of this cookie.
Yeah. We should say for everybody, Red, have you been to the United Kingdom in your life?
I have. I went in 2012.
Okay, and how did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. Their museums. Right. I went to their like seventh level museum, the Albert and Victoria Museum, which nobody was in, and that's better than any museum I've been to in the United States. I walked into a hallway that was empty that had like imagine a high school basketball sized room, and it's just me and Lauren and frescoes done by Raphael on the walls.
Listen, I always picture you and Lauren surrounded by frescoes.
Raphaelian frescoes?
Raphaelian frescoes.
I think that's how you do that. It's a wonderful country. All the pub scene alone is worth a week worth of
visits. Of course you were into the pub scene.
It was amazing.
It is the first place you've ever blended in perfectly.
It's probably the best alcohol-based destination thing you can do.
I myself have never been to Europe. I have only stayed within this specific hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
So most of my exposure to UK culture is through either BBC shows or hanging out with some Irish people. By the way, such a low opinion of the English.
Yeah.
It's so hilarious.
Oh, it's great. There's a woman on this show who I feel like Val is the British version of my Irish grandmother.
Is she?
Yeah. I felt like if you put them into the same room, one of them would stop existing.
The designated grandmas are always my favorite contestants on this show. Good.
And she is a charmer. I fucking loved her.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So the first thing they're making is a drizzle cake. Is that what it's called?
Oh, my God. This fucking drizzle cake.
So apparently an important part about the cake is they have to, like, poke holes and, like, have the drizzle go down into the holes. Is that a defining characteristic?
You got to do double drizzle.
Oh, you got to. You got to. It took like full two episodes to get acquainted with all of the people, and we'll talk about our favorites as we come to them. But I will say early on, Selassie and Val were my favorites based off of nothing but their eyes.
I'm gonna Selassie is in my top three, uh-huh. And also this is just a Bay thing. But the second I heard his name, I was like, stop hating in the Bay.
What is that related to?
You've never seen a Selassie poster?
Nope.
He is a local rapper whose music I've never heard. I constantly walking around through the hate see posters that say Selassie says stop hating in the Bay.
I don't like anybody who's going to be advertising in the hate. It's Selassie and Wavy Gravy all up in there. Terrible.
Wonderful team.
I had a long arc of my feelings toward Andrew. My initial feelings.
Andrew's fucking great.
When I see another redhead, is is only one of us can survive. So immediate initial hatred. Like I was like, I don't like this guy. I hope he fails. I hope he gets wiped off the face of the earth.
There was a second where I was like, wait, what's Red doing on the Great British Bake Off?
Yeah, if he weighed half of my weight, had way better hair, and also was just charmingly twee. I'm a lot of things. Twee is not one of them. I liked Lee a lot until the moment I found out he's a church minister.
Oh, fucking Lee. Lee, I hated immediately because I was like, this fucking stodgy British Brexit-looking motherfucker.
And I already hate the judges. In any competition, I just hate the judges. With that, I hate authority figures, and nothing is more authoritarian than a British authority figure.
Oh, my God. Every single face Mary Berry makes, no matter if she's enjoying it or not, looks like she's not enjoying it.
And there's just a certain thing that I can just never be on board with any man who is in decent shape.
Who is this applied to?
If Paul Hollywood, if anybody who can bench press their own weight, I don't like him. I don't like any part of that.
I honestly didn't think that, Paul Hollywood was that in shape.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he's, listen, maybe he's just wearing Spanx that are in the shape of Batman's abs. That's possible. But it seemed like anybody who looks like they can bench press their own body weight is somebody who took time that they could have spent working on their words, and they chose to work it on being a physically violent human being. And I don't like
Listen,
it. I don't like it.
When you're eating that many baked goods, you kind of have to exercise a decent clip. I mean, my God, so many carbohydrates.
Right. And then, yeah, Mary Berry, I just felt like, what reads to herself the abridged works of God damn it, the British Prime Minister woman.
Margaret Thatcher.
I kept thinking Margaret Atwood, and I knew that wasn't right. But I was like, if I say this out loud, I'm going to lose it.
There is nothing I would like more than British Prime Minister Margaret Atwood. She officially bans the term science fiction.
All right. So, and there is a Kate during Kate Week. I have to say that Kate reminded me a lot of the character Natalie from Love Actually, which is to say...
What is that one? Is she the one who everyone keeps saying is fat even though she's fine as fuck?
Yeah, that's the one.
Why do they keep calling her fat in that movie? She's fine as fuck.
I think that's a recurring joke literally in the movie. That obviously she's not. And so I would have to say I was charmed by Kate, would be one way to put it. Listen, I'm not British, but I might fancy her. I don't know what that term entails, but based on my basic understanding of the term, I think it might apply here. Early on, I was like, again, Michael, I liked initially. I was like, they're like, he's an economist. And I was like, finally a baker who will rely on sabermetrics, cooking based on data, numbers. That's what baking is about. The application of the correct amounts at the correct times, cooked for the correct lengths. And I liked him a lot. And my opinion of him changed over time.
This is the first time that you and I both agree about math.
Yes.
Baking is nothing but math. If you fuck up those proportions, you are not going to achieve the right result.
It's not about feelings. It's not about how adorable of a grandmother you are. It's about...
No, it is absolutely about cold, hard numbers. Grams. Kilograms. Not going to say ounces because they do not are not partial to that form of measurement.
One of the earliest shots of Selassie, which I think is genius, is early on he is just casually but deceptively just thrown a hand towel around his neck, which adds a nice like scarf-like touch. And the sartorial aspects of baking should not be overlooked. I think that's one of the things that I appreciated early on. And
Selassie is one of my favorites just because of how completely unflappable he is in all moments.
Is he meditating throughout the entire show?
I feel like he might have achieved a state of complete Zen transcendence.
I found myself like trying to look him up on the internet to see if he had a church that I could follow.
Oh, the baked goods at that church must be so good.
Dude, I would eat out the body of Christ if it tasted like this.
there was a who was it that was making the gluten-free cake? It was one of the female.
It was Candace.
It was Candace. Yeah. I was like, Candace, what the fuck are you thinking?
I know. I didn't expect that. And I think even the judges were surprised how good it was. I thought that was a ballsy move. Like, why even bring that up? Even if you choose to make it gluten-free, I mean, I guess, you know what? I always forget in these shows that one of the audiences, if you're a smart person, that you should be playing to is the unseen audience that is at home. And, like, if you're trying to become a celebrity chef on the show, I presume is part of it, right?
I think so. I don't know
how, I know it works.
I believe last year's winner has a show.
Right. Right, so so part of it is like if you know that that's kind of a thing, you're sort of projecting your availability to something that's very hot. I think it's a smart business move. I endorse it, Candace. Mm-hmm. Though I did not like Candace initially based on the fact that she was endorsing and abetting physical fitness.
She is a PE teacher, and what a PE teacher!
Not on board.
I just love all of the like the. the slow train wreck that is when somebody fucks up baking.
I hate it. Because
there's so little you can do to fix a huge fuck up.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Last year, one of the greatest moments of the entire show was when one of the grandmas opened a refrigerator and ended up ruining the Irish guy's cake and he fucking threw it out. That's an amazing moment you should definitely watch.
That's dark. Because,
he got his cake fucked up and you can't fix it. Yeah. You cannot fix most of these things. Oh my God, whenever somebody drops something, whenever somebody bumps into something and it causes a fucking sheet tray to fall, it's like, no.
If I stop watching this show, it's going to be because I can't handle the stress of people dropping stuff. Like, I might contact that Mormon company who cuts out nasty scenes in movies and ask them if they'll make a Great British Bake Off version with nobody dropping anything.
When they made Andrew carry that gingerbread house.
Shit!
First of all, I thought they're not going to make them carry the gingerbread houses over. I just say thank God that they only showed Andrew bringing it over, because if I'd had to watch that footage of every single individual contestant slowly lifting up a gingerbread house and moving it over the course of, 10, 15 feet?
Jesus.
I would not have been able to handle it.
No. So back to the drizzle kicks. Benjamina and Val are tied for the Charmingly Flustered Award early on.
Oh, Benjamina gets so flustered all the time, and it's so adorable.
Yeah, and she's also... Candace and Benjamina both have the thing where they are both pretty clearly ability-wise ahead of most of these people.
Mm-hmm.
But think of themselves as not doing well as they are. So it's hilarious, because they're like, I'm very concerned. And then they're like, this is the best one by an order of magnitude.
Fucking imposter syndrome, man. Yeah. Even in baking, it's true.
So the joke is, Sue Perkins was talking to Louise, who made the orange drizzle cake, mm-hmm. Which at that point just looked like a Death Star she was manufacturing. So of course, she had just two mounds pointing upward on the table. And she was like, very pleasing presentation. And very casually. And she's like, yes, it does look quite nice. And he's like, it'll look even better with drizzle all over it. And I was like, what is happening?
These bawdy motherfuckers. The Sue and Mel innuendo feedback cycle is incredible.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't get stuff like that on American network TV on a show that's made for your grandmother. Like, you can't do that.
No. Oh my God, I love when one of the grandmas just picks up the cake and goes, you have to listen to the song of the cakes.
Oh, that was the best. That was Val.
Oh, it's beautiful. I just imagine it going, I'm not ready, I'm not ready, I'm not ready. Wait, I'm ready.
The first moment where Andrew started winning me back is when I found out he was an aerospace engineer. Much, much like the same way, much for the same reason that I originally liked Michael. I was like, and by the way, as soon as they started the gingerbread competition, I knew that Andrew was going to be able to assemble something. He's going to know about all the materials. He's going to know how they assemble. He's going to know about leverages and angles and adhesives. He's going to have the best gingerbread house.
Oh, there were so many motherfuckers where I was like, you have just designed what is a structurally unsound at its core level gingerbread house.
Yeah, you
fucking Andrew's was insane. It had multiple. It had arches.
Yes,
it was fucking crazy shit.
Yeah, then there's fucking Val building the Dacoma Narrows of gingerbread houses.
Oh, and fucking Louise. Oh,
that was just a nightmare. We are getting way ahead of ourselves.
We are getting. It's just, this show has so much happening.
I'm surprised at the wide variation of drizzle cake shapes, because, again, I hadn't seen the show before. I didn't realize. I thought they were all, they assume people at this point have seen the show before. They're not explaining it from ground. So I had assumed that each of the challenges was like the technical challenge where they're all trying to make the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, I was sort of like, oh, wow, everybody has their own take. And the spiral one by Candace, I thought was especially showy. But personally, for me, in my life, I just love a traditional bunt shape.
Mm-hmm. And a bunt is a fine cake shape.
It's a wonderful cake. It doesn't have any edges that can get dry and crusty. It's just, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So they finished baking.
Benjamina's, I was a big fan of. Oh, fucking stupid Lee. He couldn't even get his butter and sugar to cream.
How did he, in the course of a day, he couldn't make either of the things that he had planned to make in advance?
It was insane. The whole time I was watching it, I was just like, Lee, you need to fucking leave of your own volition now.
Yeah, you need to kneel, and you need to take a cake-serving knife that you have sharpened with a file and stab yourself in the guts.
Oh my God. And then fucking stupid Tom was like,
ha ha!
Stupid Tom with too much alcohol in there.
I think Tom... I would hire Tom to make a cake, is what I'm saying.
Of course you would. Of course you would. You'd just be standing over it like, I think it needs some more alcohol.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? Could you just give me a bottle of this cake?
Listen, I love the idea that he used gin in his drizzle. I'm against tonic. That is my stated position on that cake.
Just gets in the way of the gin.
We had Mary, who's the perfect old person who does not realize the atmosphere that everybody's going to be interpreted as an innuendo, which kept coming up. I can take more orange than that. Of course you can, you saucy minx.
Oh, and she's such an English grandma. When she tasted the alcohol cake and she was like, ooh, I can't live to tell the tale.
Yeah. Val did not follow the prime directive of it being moist enough.
Mm-hmm,
that was the one word they really emphasized. Moist. Yep.
Too much icing, not enough actual drizzle.
Selassie's smile makes my panties moist. I am shipping Paul and Selassie.
Is that your slash fic?
Yes.
Is that your GBBO slash fic?
Dude, those dudes are going to bench press each other. It's going to be wonderful.
Oh, Selassie's cake was fucking beautiful. Oh, and he forgot to put the cinnamon in the cake, and then he was just like, I'm just going to put it into my drizzle.
And it's like, oh, you loving man. Just rolling with the punches. Yeah. Which of these cakes, I think I'm going to try and ask this every time, which of these cakes would you want to eat yourself?
Oh, fuck. I really liked Selassie. Jane's poppy seed cake, I liked a lot. I liked the gimmick object of Louise's orange cake.
Yes.
That was very aesthetically pleasing.
That's probably one of the best things she did on the show right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah. And Rav, very nice presentation on that cake. I'm going to have to go with Selassie just because the whole thing seems so interesting to me.
I was fascinated by the sort of swirl of Candace's cake. I thought that was the best presentation personally. Lemon poppy seed bundt cake is the only cake I need every day of my life until I die.
Lemon poppy seed bundt cake. That looked like a fucking good Jane. Cake. I think we're in agreement.
Yeah.
I think we are in agreement.
Yeah. So, at this point, I'm like still learning everybody's names. This is where I wrote down, like, is her name Marion Barry? And that was not the case. I'm sure she has her own controversies, but I'm sure they're very different than...
Actually, everybody, if people want to look up Paul Hollywood's history of controversies...
Oh, yeah?
Oh, let me tell you, he the...
Steroids,
the,
right?
No. Mm. It seems Paul Hollywood can't keep his piping bag in his pants.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. Piping bag is a terrible metaphor for a dick.
I think it is the perfect metaphor.
It's a weird shape. It's soft in the wrong places.
Exactly.
Also, it's just not in. No woman wants to see that. It's sharp at the front and white at the bottom.
You really do not want the contents to be too thick.
Yeah. Just put some warm hands on it for a while.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
First technical challenge, 12 Jaffa cakes.
Oh, man. When they were like Jaffa cakes, I was just like, there's so much that I have only absorbed through hearing names of things on European television. And it's just fucking crazy to watch. Oh, my God. When Paul dunked his cake and Mary Berry just looked at him really dismissively and said, we don't do that in the South here.
I was like, the North remembers.
Oh boy, does it.
If there's one thing that I have learned from the Great British Bake Off, it is that I want Mary to bake for me.
I want so many of these people to bake for
me. Every time I just want
to hang out. I just want to go blazer shopping with Sue Perkins.
Every time there's like the example given for the technical challenge, I'm like, oh me.
Oh my mercy.
Yeah. The Jaffa cakes look amazing. There's something when they were making the Jaffa cakes, and Mary's were so perfect, and all of theirs were such trash.
There were so many Jaffa cakes that I was just like, this is garbage.
Yeah. I was like, Mary's gonna tear these people a new asshole.
Oh, poor Andrew. Poor Andrew. I was just like, Andrew, buddy, you're so close. So close.
Yeah. You gotta get him right set up, man.
Yeah. Oh my god. One of my favorite lines was when Mel was like, how did you get orange juice? Candace just goes, the orange.
That was a great line.
That was an amazing line.
I was a little disappointed that they didn't notice that there was the little extra orange in there. Like, I was mm-hmm. waiting for that. On her behalf, when they were judging, I was like, is there something in there you want to mention that separates it from the rest of the Jaffa cakes?
Oh, and then fucking... fucking Paul Hollywood son of a bitch.
Wait, before we get to that, I'm not to the judging yet, but it's much more stressful seeing people like being like, what size should I use? I don't know. When I also don't know. And I'm like, this is a mess. What do you do?
I'm always like, on the side of smaller. When Benjamino was like, should I do bigger? Should I do smaller? And I was like, Benjamino, smaller, smaller. You almost have it.
So close. Andrew's panic was incredibly charming. He is one of the best.
Oh my god.
He is one of the best. It's an obvious panic, but it's a very charming panic.
It really is. I just love whenever they pick like one of these really like weird traditional British foods, and then some of the contestants have no idea what they are.
it's great. And then of course, because they're British, they don't allow for that at all.
Of course, they're like, you've never had a Jaffa cake?
They're like,
my God,
a Jaffa cake. And then it's like, turns out the loser today is kicked out of the country. Brexit, friends.
Can we get to one
please,
of the...
Please tell me about Paul.
Paul Hollywood, this son of a bitch, when he went, these are all uniformly bad. I was like, I want to reach into that fucking TV screen and throttle this motherfucker.
First of all, you give credit to Wendy Liebman. And second of all, no adverb-based jokes. I don't want any adverb-based jokes on my television shows. Look, I feel very strongly...
Wendy Liebman invented the pause between words for comedic effect, all right?
Yeah. She literally... Yeah. She's based a 20-year career around that. You need to credit her.
By the way, everybody should watch Wendy Liebman's Comedy Central Presents on all of her comedy specials. She's very funny.
She's very funny. And it's surprising because I feel like there's a lot of comics who, you know, sort of have a... You could... On a lesser comic, you would call it a gimmick. Mm-hmm. But on her, I would call it a style. And would not manage to keep that fresh for a long time. And it could be... It's always at risk of becoming self-parody at some point. And she's just mm-hmm. always been excellent from... early on into the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wendy Liebman. Judging. So there's a huge emphasis on uniformity, and I guess it's a technical competition.
The English want things to be uniform? Big surprise.
Val was caught trimming the size then, and I was scandalized, frankly.
Oh, so scandal. Oh my god, when fucking the was Val the one who didn't grease her cups enough?
Yep, that was the one. And then...
Poor motherfucker.
I love the poetry of Selassie, who had never seen or eaten a Jaffa cake, nailed it. That Zen
nailed
prince.
Nailed it!
And then the
fucking
next day...
destroyed it!
And then the next... And in episode 2, in the technical challenge, he makes something that he's made before and wrecks it. Makes the worst one.
It. Yeah. Whiffed it so fucking bad. That's what I love about this show. Someone can completely eat shit and then just destroy the next one. I think that's what happened to Andrew this episode, right?
Yeah.
I think he whiffed the technical challenge by doing them upside down.
Yep.
And then he came back in the fucking Showstopper.
And I think it wasn't even that bad. Like, I feel like they removed too many points for them being upside down. Like, you could say, as long as they're still uniform and tasted good, like, come on. That's like 1 point. I don't know. The early favorites they discuss, Selassie, Jane, and Benjamina, who I believe are still early favorites. Jane is the most competent of the grandmothers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Some of the grandmother, sometimes you get a grandmother who's just like, has no idea what the fuck she's doing and just gets by on that grandmotherly charm.
Yeah.
But this lady is killing it.
You definitely get the feeling this year that Lee was an affirmative action choice.
This is exactly. They were like, we need a stodgy old white man to round out this far, far too diverse round of contestants.
Right. And he was
out of his league.
He was not ready. I mean, it's good for his people that they can see themselves baking. But
listen,
he was not up to it.
I think white men just need to wait a few years for when it's their time, finally.
Right. And though I am sick of hearing people complain about the pipeline when it comes to white men baking. So there was... Yeah, so... And then on the bubble early on, we have Lee, Val, Louise, and Andrew, which... Mm-hmm. Andrew's the only person who's completely extricated himself from that group, I feel like. I feel like he's solidly upper middle of the pack at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Andrew fucking, he took a hard hit in the technical challenge, but he's really just been fucking blazing away since.
Yeah. So the first Showstopper challenge is the mirror glaze cake, which I've seen a mirror glaze cake before, and I'm never very impressed by how they taste, but they always look very good.
Yeah, I think this was one of the ones that I had never heard of before, and I was just like, fucking, you're supposed to see yourself in this cake?
And
I see myself in every cake.
I'm getting a little ahead of it here, but I feel like Lee, and this happens all the time on these types of shows, like there's a person who's eliminated on the first day who it feels like just by the fact that Lee made it this far, he has to be good at something. But he just took three shits on his fucking baking sheets today. Like, he had nothing of value that he produced.
That could not have been an uglier fucking mirror cake.
Yeah. It wasn't even vaguely mirror-ish.
Yeah.
And it just, it looked like he just smeared feces on the side of a baseball. I don't know. It was awful.
Literally a shit cake.
Yeah. At the beginning, he's like, I'm just trying to keep focused and everything's going to be fine. And I was like, I don't know, Lee. I'm not sure it's going to be fine.
I'm definitely going to agree. Four fruit frosting is very hard to say.
It is.
Try to say that repeatedly over and over at a high speed.
Four fruit frosting. No,
four fruit frosting. Four fruit frosting. Four fruit frosting. Four fruit frosting. It's very hard to say.
So, were you surprised that the fucking otaku-looking dude is making a Japanese-inspired cake?
This, when he said, I'm going to make a matcha cake, I was like, this fucking nerd.
and then
this fucking nerd.
And then in the back of your head, you were like, I was going to make that cake.
I was like, oh, cake kawaii desu.
So was that was Michael, I think? Or was it Tom? I got them mixed up a lot. All white guys look the same.
I think I'm going to say it's Michael because in the next episode he makes a Dune reference.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to say Michael is the huge fucking nerd of the group.
Yeah, Michael's the huge nerd. Tom is the alcoholic slash serial killer, which I'll get to later.
Is Tom the 19-year-old or is Michael the 19-year-old?
I believe Michael's the 19-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, when Benjamina's crying and Sue is so supportive.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just so fucking beautiful to watch. Well, that's what I love about this show. And fucking, you watch Top Chef and they are so fucking mean all the time. And it's just like, in this show, it's just like, hey, we're all just trying to support each other and make good television and cakes.
I'm actually surprised that you're on board for that because I felt the tone was a little weird as an American where she's crying and she's like, button it up, shove those emotions down below.
I mean, it's a very English way of supporting somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, shove those tears back in your face. If you don't feel anything, you'll be able to continue on. Keep calm and bake on.
Just lie back and think of England.
Yeah, it seemed borderline supportive to me. I actually was not clear to me how Benjamina was receiving this.
It's fair.
And Tom was completely betrayed by the chefs the previous day, who were like, way too much alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then initially, though, I loved his instincts to fill everything with alcohol. And also, there's 100 milliliters left over. That's alcohol that can go directly into the chef.
Is that how you budget out your
ingredients?
You
don't have to distribute it through the whole cake.
This goes in the cake. This goes in the chef. This goes in the cake. This goes in the chef.
Anytime you open a bottle of alcohol to cook, there's the portion that you put in the cake, and then you have to finish the bottle. Because alcohol famously goes bad almost immediately. You have to get rid of it within an hour, basically. It's like French bread. It's just garbage after you open the bottle. So that's just what you have to do. That's what I've always thought.
I mean, listen, you've always proven that to be true. I will say that. You have stuck to your guns on that one.
Never in my house has someone said, ooh, this wine's turned.
You've never seen a half-empty bottle of wine in your life?
Nobody's gone to my cupboard when I said, grab a bottle of wine, and said, oh, I'll just get the open one. There are only corked bottles in my presence.
Oh, God. That Rob's cake was looking motherfucking good on this one.
Rob? Who the fuck is Rob?
Rob.
Rob.
Sorry.
Oh, Rob.
R-A-V. Yes,
right. Rob. I thought you said Rob, and I was like, that is the whitest name I've ever heard in my life. Yeah, Rob's cake was looking very good. Yeah.
Yeah, the matcha cake looked fucking insane and not in a good way.
Oh, no, I thought I would have loved the matcha cake. Matcha is a flavor that I enjoy a lot.
I'm not a big matcha guy.
Oh, no, it's no. Lovely. It tastes very, like, it's not overly sweet. Like, I like it a lot. It's a good balance in a cake.
All right, fair enough.
There's so much wasted food. Like, give it to me. I want to be the new host that eats all the garbage food that nobody else wants.
I do like when the hosts really enjoy something and they're like, I'm just going to stand here eating for a little bit. You guys go on without me. The blue cake, blue, not a good color for icing.
No.
Not a good color for icing.
What's crazy, when she was making it, they were like, ugh. And I was like, oh, I don't like it. And then I saw it on the cake and I was like, I was wrong.
Yeah. Oh, that's always my favorite part, when the judges can tell while somebody's making something that it's going to turn out badly. And they're like, maybe you should reconsider.
And they're like, you did not give me enough time to like plan a different recipe. I just have to do what I came up with. And so I don't understand why it's obviously for those moments of tension, but I don't know why everybody doesn't have their own fridges. Like, the fact that they share devices like that drives me insane.
Oh,
like, there's
yeah.
so much going against all of the competitors, and the fact that they have to like put all their stuff in this same device. I don't like that. I don't like
it. Oh yeah. Anytime somebody opens a refrigerator, I'm like, you better make sure that fucking door shuts all the way.
Yeah. And I forget who it was. I'm just going to guess Val, but somebody said, oh, Mother Hubbard, an exclamation. And I believe I said, and then clap my hands.
Oh, that was so great. And I love during the judging, when every time that they tried to do the... I think this is really good.
Yeah, once or twice I got mad at the editing, where they had clearly taken facial expressions from other competitors' cakes. Like, they just show Paul exactly just being like, and then he'd be like, this is delicious.
I love Selassie when he reacts with just a very quiet cheers.
Oh, he's the best.
He's so low key. He's so great.
It is very weird, though. At one point, they're like, he loves basketball. And then they show him playing basketball, and there's never been an individual that was built to play left tackle like Selassie, who is playing the wrong sport.
Well, listen, they don't play American football over there.
Excuse me. He should be playing gunner for rugby.
I don't know what that even means.
I made up a position. That's not a real thing.
Of course you did.
I just learned recently there's actually... Do you know where rugby was invented?
I don't know.
At Rugby Academy.
These English motherfuckers. So little imagination.
Well, I mean, football's a pretty dumb name when it comes down to it. Anyway, so judging time, Jane first. I was surprised how much credit she got for this in retrospect. Because, I mean, you look at the cake, and it was like, it was a ramp. You could skateboard down that cake.
I'm just happy for Jane because she always seems like she's about to start crying.
Yes. She...
Yeah.
She... I mean, my favorite human being on the show is Val. There's even a moment... we'll get to her later, but she is like, everything has gone wrong. And she's still, even when she is, like, her eyes are filled with tears. She's making self-deprecating quips, and she's present the entire time, and I love her.
Yeah. This is actually, I feel like this specific part might be the most English thing in the entire show. When they had that little, like, 3-second B-roll clip of a quail just walking across the screen, I was like, this is very English.
The harshest thing that anybody said in these 2-hour-long episodes we watched was when Mary took a bite of Selassie's cake and said, I think you were very brave.
Ooh. They liked it, though. They liked it.
They liked the taste of the cake, but you could see even Selassie's mystical, zen-like eyes were dead inside in that moment.
Cheers.
Val's cake looks amazing, and I think she did better than they implied. I think they showed somebody else's facial expressions to make her look
fair. I'm so happy for Benjamina. She's so relieved.
Dude, she looks tortured. It was that was the moment. This was the moment that I realized, oh, she's just an absurd perfectionist. You could see in her eyes that she was ready to commit seppuku, and they were like, this is a perfect cake. You made a perfect cake. And they were just like, again, you could see her tearing up. I was so happy for Benjamina. And there was a lingering piece at this moment. I was like, I can't tell if Andrew's, because he's like, good job, Benjamina, and clapping. And I was like, I can't tell if he's being genuinely supportive or it's just a manipulative piece of shit. Like, I'm so used to that in reality TV
shows.
Are you
sure you're not projecting your gingerdom?
Other redheads are a nightmare. And then... there's some part of me that believes so Candace first episode went with black lipstick, and I feel like part of Mary's conservative British upbringing was judging her just based on that. I think she got knocked down a couple of pegs just because of her lipstick on the first day.
Listen, a PE teacher with black lipstick? Well, I never.
That is just not done.
We don't do that here in the South.
No, we do not. And then Andrew goes up and it looks stunning. His cake,
that
is gorgeous.
Fucking Andrew, my man. I'm team Andrew.
Yeah, no, this
I'm full team Andrew.
This was the exact moment where I got fully on board. I mean, he's overenthusiastic, possibly manipulative. I may have to fight him to the death one day, but I like Andrew a lot.
at the ginger moot?
Yes. There can only be one.
Yeah, and then Lee gets kicked the fuck out for his shit cake.
Yep.
Good. Ugh. Fucking stupid Lee.
At this point, it happens all the time, I'm sure, but there's a great look on Mary's face where she just seems disgusted with something Sue and Yellow Jacket have said, where she's just like, can you turn anything into innuendo?
And they can.
Yeah.
Oh boy, can they.
I could not get over the first star baker, a woman who made a drizzle as fine as a holiday in Frizzton, which is not a real place. That's not a real place.
I cannot deal with all of these Frizzton references.
Yeah. It's like they don't know that all city names are supposed to be in Spanish. Isn't that everybody else's reality?
Yeah. I mean, my God. Los Angeles?
San Francisco? Santa Barbara?
San Jose?
Bakersfield?
Idiot.
All right. I literally wrote down and leaving today, and normally this is suspenseful, you're worried if they edited it weird to throw you off the trail, and I was like, it better fucking be Lee.
Oh yeah. Oh no, the second they showed his cake, I was like, if Lee doesn't get kicked out,
I would have lost faith in the show.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But no, Lee gets kicked the fuck out, that shite bastard.
Right. And it's like, we all bitch about it, but we all are relying on them to give you some ambiguity so that you're like, you know, tensed under the wire when they're trying to decide who to make the star baker or who to kick off. But when somebody is so clearly lagging like that, you just have to let it happen. You can't you can't try and salvage that. Like, just let him go. Next week, we'll try and build a little more tension into it. And you have to hope it's just going to be a little more competitive, which I think it will be in weeks three going forward.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, my God. They really started to ratchet that shit up immediately. Yeah.
And then, so I guess, so you'll have to tell me. So I assume, is it the same every series where there's like a cake week, then biscuit week?
I only watched the previous series, which is available on Netflix.
Gotcha.
In the United States. And basically they stick to, you know, this fairly simple template of, you know, cake week, bread week, fucking shit like that.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like, who knows if the order's the same, but they have the same weeks. Okay. That makes sense.
You know, those English love uniformity.
Speaking of the English, Biscuit episode two is Biscuits, which.
Fucking Biscuits. Which, of course. They're called Cookies and Miles, you sons of bitches.
I was like, are cookies or crackers? I don't remember. I think they're biscuits are shitty cookies, is what I understand. Yeah. They kept being like, this cookie is wrong. It's not hard as a rock. I have my it didn't damage my dentures at all. Biscuits are terrible cookies. I don't want them to exist. I didn't like any part of that.
When Sue, that's one of my other favorite parts of the show, when they do the history of the baked good.
Yeah.
When Sue was eating all of those medieval biscuits, I was like, I see zero difference between these and a modern biscuit.
Yeah, they're awful.
They're really terrible looking.
I think so Sue is gone this episode.
Yeah, that's odd. I assume it was some sort of, some sort of
kidney stones?
Scheduling.
She just wasn't
something.
There.
she had a very important blazer emergency.
Yeah, she could not find the right shirt. And
Mel?
Mel, yeah. But she, her constant setting Mary or Paul up for innuendo is hilarious. But the best one in the show so far. Who wants to eat some carpet, Mary? I'll eat a bit of carpet.
That was the best fucking one. That was when she said that. I assume that when Sue finally saw that, she just started standing up and clapping.
A tear rolling down her cheek.
That was possibly one of the best innuendos in the entire series.
I mean, and considering that the first challenge is an American innuendo in itself, we're gonna make some iced biscuits. 24 of them. Which is a lot to do in that.
This is just
in a couple of hours.
The fucking greasiest, most sexual baking contest I've ever seen.
I wasn't ready for that. I always forget that, like,
the English love bawdiness.
Yeah, it's weird. They're like, when it comes to like actual sexuality, they're more uptight than Americans. But when it comes to innuendo, they are like, they'll go really far on what is supposed to be a G-rated show.
Listen, fucking, they loved Oscar Wilde for his innuendo. They hated Oscar Wilde for his actual sexual activities.
Yeah, it's such a weird society.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get into the ice biscuit challenge. We have Louise making 500 tea bags. I don't know what that's for.
Oh, and she got second drop of the series.
What?
She dropped some shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There are two drops in this fucking episode.
I hate to be this person, but I am so, so glad Louise is gone. Unrelated to her baking ability, just because she is so stressful to watch.
Oh, my God. The whole time, I just can't fucking deal with it.
If you're an empathetic person at all, just watching Louise is like just torture. It's just torture. It's like every minute you can see her heart's breaking. Andrew's dad...
That is my favorite thing. Women's shortbread contests open to men. I am going to be the one who breaks open this glass ceiling on women's shortbread contests that have held back my people for so many years.
Andrew's dad is the ultimate male feminist. It turns out Andrew's dad is actually a sea lion. Hey guys, I made a shortbread. Nobody was
hey,
talking
my shortbread
to you.
Is just as good as yours.
Tom, at this point, I've decided has what it takes to be a serial killer. By which I mean he's creative, organized, and has deep dark bags under his eyes, like he's tortured by voices that makes him do things he'll regret.
That's very fair. I think that the Candace kissing her pug should be grounds for dismissal from the series.
What? No, that rocketed her way up in my levels of esteem.
I'm like, she's got dog mouth. She has literal dog mouth.
I'm team Candace's pug.
Well, of course you are. You're constantly making out with your dog.
I am. So then Michael captains his university hockey team. And then they showed him leaping about around on grass, which is unrelated to hockey. Like, do they call hockey soccer in the UK? What is happening?
I think perhaps they were playing field hockey.
Oh, do they just not?
I don't know. I don't. You're asking me about much less regular sports, international sports. Please, sir, please. I'll give you a lecture on 2000 AD before I give you a lecture on English sporting terms.
So they have hockey that's played on grass and then ice hockey that's played on ice. Is that the world they're living in?
I don't know. It sounds fucked up to me.
I don't like it.
I mean, my God, who would ever willingly get on ice? The chances of you falling through and drowning are incredible.
And then one of the biggest miscues, I feel like, in this entire competition, Benjamina makes her chicken drumstick-shaped cookies look like flowers when she should have just made them look like chicken drumsticks.
I like that. There is nothing I've loved more in this series than when Mel picked up Andrew's gingerbread cookie and went, oh, look at this platypus here. And he turned it around and he was like, actually, it's a bicycle.
I swear to God, if I was in his position, I would have made it a platypus.
How do you not make the platypus once you put the platypus out there? Yeah. I mean, I know they're not native to Ireland or Cambridge in this case.
World, really.
Truly. That one of my favorite things about any sort of a baking televised contest is when like three other people finish before the rest of the crowd, so in all of the group shots they're just standing around.
Selassie like helps some people out.
Rob was just standing there like, I hope my biscuits came out good.
There's a montage of biscuits going into ovens. Mm-hmm. So I do want to know which week is shit talk week, where they just go into the kitchen and talk shit about other people. That's half the reason you go into a kitchen. That and to eat directly the ingredients you're supposed to be cooking with.
Oh, my God. That's one of the few perks of working in a kitchen.
Val is super charming and terrible at following instructions. I don't think she's good for a competition. Salisa helping Louise out, chanting, don't stress, don't stress, don't stress, which I'm sure was very helpful.
Horrible. Oh, and a lot of people just fucking around with piping bags, which are very hard to fuck around with.
So they call a stop to that challenge. Selassie stretches like he was in the middle of yoga. Looks serene as shit. Andrew's biscuits are apparently cardboard tasting.
Oh, they looked adorable.
They look so good.
Yeah. Beer cookies? I think that was Tom's, I think. The fucking beer cookies looked real good.
They like do you know what I objected to? Selassie's cookies were inconsistent and ugly as shit, and they didn't even comment on that.
Ha, the wheelies?
Yeah. They were hideous looking.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
Do you know what happened? Paul was too distracted by Selassie's eyes.
It's so beautiful. You could just fall into them.
Yeah. And
I think you go ahead, because I think I'm slightly further ahead.
I really like the look of Tom's coffee biscuits. I thought those were excellent looking. I thought they were themed and clever, and those were my favorites.
Yeah. Just some pretty solid looking biscuits in this round. I think that one of my absolute favorite lines comes from the little Sue section, where she goes, I love a dunking as much as a 14th century witch hunter.
I missed that.
That is an amazing line.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm all on board for this competition and this history lesson. I was like, what is happening? I almost skipped ahead of this.
Oh no, when she bites into one of those shitty biscuits and just goes, austerity.
I did like that line. I did like that.
That Sue is a fantastic comedian.
And then we skip ahead to 12 Viennese Whirls. I had never heard of these, and I'm angry about it. I need to find a place to get Viennese Whirls stat. Like a delicious sort of shortbread cookie with jam and then like what, frosting? I don't know. I'm on board.
Mm, yeah. These look pretty fucking good. I'd never had one of these fucking ever, but these look goddamn good.
I need them in my mouth, in my face, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Selassie, I called it. As soon as Selassie said, like, I don't want to jinx myself, but I've made these before. I was like,
poor bastard. Poor bastard. Pride goeth before the Viennese whirl.
And, yeah, I was like, it's a good thing they made 12 of these, because that's how many I want from each person.
Yes.
Mary, I think, made my favorite of the Viennese whirls. Is that fair? Her Viennese whirls looks really good.
Oh, those look fucking structurally perfect.
Possibly my favorite moment in the whole show is the reason I know the temperature is it says on the thermometer, jam. From Michael, and they like zoom in on the thermometer, and it's like, this is the jam temperature. So, good job.
That's good.
Good job with working with all of your tools. I was rooting for Andrew at this point. The difference between Louise and Val is Louise gives me panic attacks and Val is just charming to watch eat shit.
Yeah, she's so grandmotherly about it. And meanwhile, fucking Louise is just a goddamn nervous wreck when she's eating shit.
I thought Benjamin was gonna kill this. I thought she was gonna do better than she did. Tom's choice to not put them in the fridge was his downfall.
Oh, you gotta put them in the fridge.
I didn't realize. And also, it took me a second to realize what was happening, but Mel's Austrian accent, the British version of an Austrian accent, is hilarious. It's so good.
There's nothing funnier than asking European people to do the accents of other countries. If Sarah Griffin's American accent impression is one of the most hilarious things I've ever heard. It's so insulting. I love it so much.
What's your impression of Sarah Griffin's American accent impression?
Oh, well, I was just at the office the other day. It's very insulting.
I love, well, yeah, I mean, it's hard because you're talking to somebody who's Irish, and I'm like, you have a voice that sounds like a magical spell, like whenever you're talking.
They truly does. Those fucking, that, just goddamn honey in your ear.
Yeah, well, the problem is, like, you know, their whole economy collapsed, because the thing is, you can't have a serious, you can't have a serious economic base from a country where every suggestion sounds like magic. It's like, well, why don't we loan out 10 times the amount of money that we have to another country? And it's like, yeah, that sounds good when you said it. Whereas, like, if somebody had said that with like a nasally California accent, you would have been like, oh, that sounds awful. Let's think about that again. Or an uptight British accent. And you were like, I don't know. It just made my asshole tight. Like, let's consider this some more. I don't like it.
Oh, and for any of our Irish listeners, I assume this goes without saying, but repeal the 8th.
Oh, which one's the 8th?
I believe that is their abortion ban.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is very hard to get an abortion in Ireland.
Well,
very hard.
Well, yeah,
not easy at all.
My favorite thing that I always forget is that it was like illegal to get divorced there until 1996.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of crazy shit. Just wait until if you look up, I forgot what they're called, but they basically had these, like, nunnery prisons that they would send girls to, where basically, like, thousands of them died, and there's, like, these, like, crazy mounds of, like, aborted fetuses from, like, just the fucking, there is some crazy shit in that Irish history.
There's, yeah, that pleasant voice hides a lot of fucked upness.
Oh, boy, does it. Really do need to get Sarah on one of these British Bake Off episodes.
Gotta make it happen.
Yeah.
The I don't know if, even with our setup, I don't think we could handle that kind of latency.
Oh, no, God. That is some coordination I do not think Skype is capable of handling.
Mm-mm. I do love the variance in the technical challenge, just like the best Viennese rolls versus the worst. The worst one literally looks like a child drew a cracker and then tried to make it come into life.
I just really love that the parchment paper had like the little circles on it that you were supposed to stay inside.
Yeah.
It was very cute. Very cute.
They did a little bit of like misrepresentation where I thought Benjamina was going to get the best one and Kate's, which, you know, Kate's lovely. She can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And then Jane, but then it was like, we were shown Jane's and I was like, oh damn, Jane's are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little annoyed with Rav's, which they said were perfect, but the wrong size. And I was like, that's dumb. Because I thought his looked really great. And I was like, you know what? These Viennese rolls seem a little too big to put in my mouth. They seem like they're 3 bites when they should just be 2. And frankly, I would prefer Roth's.
As would I.
What do you think of that?
As would I. Yeah. You're not going to see any argument from me.
Yeah. Poor Selassie.
The man took a hit. The man took a hit.
And Val did okay. She did okay.
Yeah.
Selassie loses. Andrew and Val help themselves. Benjamina got third. Jane got second. Kate did first. The women are really separating themselves from the garbage men.
Truly.
There are no clear winners or losers. The showstopper at this point, we all know, is make or break.
Mm-hmm. The gingerbread house.
Holy.
First of all,
shit.
I'm going to say that treacle is the worst possible name for molasses.
It's awful.
I am very happy that America rightfully changed it to molasses because treacle sounds fucking awful.
It was the original reason why American English broke from British English.
They were like, treacle, fuck no.
Yeah, we're coming up with their own word. And then, that just opened the door.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do they have to make a gingerbread house, not only does the gingerbread have to be delicious, but there is a narrative element to the gingerbread house. It has to tell a story.
And a height requirement.
And there's a height requirement. What the height requirement, I'm okay with. That seems like structural integrity, I'm okay with. But adding the narrative element just seems absurd.
still though, some of them nailed it.
Oh, yeah, some of them nailed it. I liked this challenge a lot because, I mean, the separation from the best to the worst was...
Oh, my God.
Literally, both Louise and Val both had theirs collapse at pencils down.
Oh, my God.
Two of them.
Louise's already looked pretty fucking ugly.
Yeah. Even the intended look was bad.
Yeah. Like, this was never going to be a winner.
I kept going... I kept betraying my own instincts because they'd be like really focused on presentation. And I was like, this is about food. I don't care what it looks like. I just care what it tastes like. And then I'd find myself against my own previous statement being really impressed by the presentation.
Oh, yeah. I was like, damn, I would eat Andrew's punt any time of day.
Yeah. I don't know what a punt is, but
it's
I would
a boat.
Eat his.
I had to look it up.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah. Apparently they go punting down the Cambridge River.
Oh. He was like, there I am asleep in the punt. And I was like, that sounds pornographic.
There's some fucking Rav trying to pull off a Ferris wheel.
Yeah, very aggressive. I would definitely cast Michael to play Triss as Ash's thirsty 50-year-old puppy love in Game of Thrones.
Very fair.
And then they're like, sometimes you're just like, are they doing this on purpose? Or like, it's like, oh, I've got the sticky ginger cake from my sticky ginger carpets. And I'm like, what are you doing?
I liked the one that was the version with the English Girl Scouts, because that oath sounded fucking crazy.
That was nuts. So what were the names?
I promise I will do my best. And apparently there was some sort of fucking oath to the queen given, because every fucking single thing needs an oath to the dumb goddamn queen in it.
Yeah, England's kind of like the city of Chicago in their obsession with their ruler. Have you ever been to
Emmanuel?
Yeah. Have you ever been to Chicago?
No.
So I haven't been there since actually Rahm Emanuel took over. You used to, anywhere in O'Hare Airport, you'd get off a plane and there'd be a huge banner that said, Mayor Daley welcomes you. You get in a cab and it's like, the cab is licensed by the city of Chicago and Mayor Daley. And like everywhere in that stupid city, they'd remind you of their weird racist overlord.
Oh boy, you know, this is fucking, those motherfuckers are racist.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know. I don't know if Rahm Emanuel has. He definitely took him down. I'm gonna find out. I'm gonna be there tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Hi to Kanye for me.
I will.
Chicago's favorite son.
That's got to be Obama.
No, it's Kanye.
Obama.
No, it's Kanye.
Obama. Honest question, Obama. Without looking, who has more followers on Twitter?
I'm going to say Obama, but I am also going to say that Kanye's tweets are more entertaining.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. I mean, listen, I still have a lot of problems with Bill Cosby innocent and then like 18 exclamation points. That is a tweet that never needed to happen.
I'm shocked by how much shit Kanye gets away with among people. Okay, so
I mean, did you see the video for Famous?
No,
that's the one.
I don't watch any of Kanye's shit.
That's the one where he had all of the wax animatronic figures. Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize they were animatronic.
They were actually breathing.
Still of them. Oh, that's creepy.
Oh no, it's very creepy.
Yeah. And then like all those people are like, "Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg, give him $1 billion." And I was like, "Never give him any money."
No, he's got all of that Kim Kardashian Hollywood money coming his way.
He'll be all right. Okay. So Kanye West has 25 million Twitter followers. Barack Obama over or under?
Oh, fuck. I'm going to say...
Just to be clear, it's not the White House. At Barack Obama.
This is at POTUS.
No,
is this at POTUS or at Barack Obama?
At Barack Obama.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to say Barack's personal account. I'm going to go under.
So here's what's interesting. Barack Obama, 77 million followers. He's three times Kanye West.
God damn it.
But POTUS has only 10 million followers.
Ah, well then.
Interesting.
And you know it's because nobody wants to see who gets that handle turned over to them.
Yep. So they've got the 3D gingerbread store, we've got Candace. Candace, mm-hmm. Everybody knows this person in their life. There's a workaholic who's on the verge of working themselves to death and having a nervous breakdown, and they are the only people who can't see it. Like, every other person in their life is like, hey, how about you fucking take a vacation and not try and fit 19 hours into an 8-hour day? And they're like, no, I just need this one more thing.
When Candace was like, I'm going to do a nice little scene within the gingerbread house. I was just like, Candace, you are setting yourself up for a major disaster.
I
was wrong.
And you were wrong. And what's crazy is there's a lot of intricacy to it, but what she didn't do was try and make the structure too complicated. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people tried to fuck with like giant structures that didn't make a lot of sense. Hers, like, was very intricate. It had a lot of details, but she relied on basic mom and pop gingerbread house architecture, which was a very smart move.
Oh yeah, definitely. Very well designed gingerbread house.
Yeah. Kate's got three different flavors of gingerbread, which I respect greatly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good variety. Most of the people just went with the single uniform flavor.
I have a question that I actually don't know. So Tom's best mate is named Pod, which, first of all, Game of Thrones applicable. Second of all, is best mate a British euphemism? Like, can you be openly gay in British society? Like, I feel like you should be able to. I don't know.
I mean, listen.
I don't know.
Listen, we all know what they did to Oscar Wilde.
Well, yeah, but that was not in 2016.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, the England had, it wasn't, I mean, my God, we go back to the fucking early 90s and Margaret Thatcher wanted to put gay people in concentration camps. So it's
I don't know.
I assume it's still pretty rough.
And then it's like.
But I think best mate is just a general term indicating friendship.
I think so. But it's like, they also love euphemism for euphemism's sake. So I feel like even if they did, I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. Also, love. Can I say I love the choice of the Chrysler Building by Benjamina, an Art Deco edifice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she may have reached too far on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But God, damn,
I like
what a beautiful building.
The other grandma who was like, I'm going to do the Empire State Building and the Statue of Liberty and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was very interested in Rob's Ferris wheel. Mm-hmm. I can only say, yeah, so the aerospace engineer had way too many pieces. I don't know why.
And yet assembled perfectly.
Assembled perfectly, yeah. I'm sure if they had shown it, he would have like layers of exact blueprints and sizes that took into account before and after sizes as he was baking them, which is very important when you're trying to get edges to join.
I want to see the mathematical proof of the tensile strength of gingerbread.
Yes. Yes. Fear is the mind killer.
Dune reference. Fucking kicking out a Dune reference. Although I would rather stick my hand in a Gamja bar than make a gingerbread house.
I felt like Thomas was repeating the phrase he has tattooed backwards on his chest.
He's got to be able to look in a mirror and see that shit.
At one point, I just typed in all caps, gingerbread was not meant to be a building material.
It's not.
When Val's Statue of Liberty fell, my jaw literally fell. The muscles in my face went slack. My jaw fell. My eyes popped open. My asshole imploded and caused a black hole.
Oh my God! Wait, that was my reaction when they were like, "All right, Andrew, move your gingerbread house." I was like, "No, let it stay there."
The most, like, I don't know how to put it. The most dark, self-deprecating thing I've ever heard anybody say is Benjamina referring to her own gingerbread house. It's actually quite shameful what I've done. That's some Catholic shit.
The English have so much inbuilt shame in them.
Oh, man. I was like, Jesus, somebody needs to go to therapy.
The entire nation.
And Louise's and Val's, we all recovered, but both collapsed at the moment they said pencils down.
Oh, when and Louise's just fucking, that wasn't even salvageable.
No.
That was just like, everything that has gone wrong structurally that could go wrong went wrong.
It's like they kind of equalize everybody where if somebody's looks great, unless it's like absolutely perfect. But if somebody's is very good, they'll find mm-hmm. the smallest thing and criticize it. And but they'll also do something which most reality shows don't do. If it's very bad, they will compliment something that does not deserve complimenting. They'll find something and just be like, your frosting is very tangible, you know, like they'll just pick something very basic. I like how it actually exists in this world and isn't stuck in some other world where you can't see or feel or taste it.
I would say that this gingerbread house is definitely in three dimensions,
right?
You've done very well in that way.
One person screwed up and made them actually physically in two dimensions. And that was unforgivable. Val is wonderful. Even she's tearing up and still making a cheerful joke at her own expense.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it was, but it was great. Tom, I think, might be colorblind after seeing his green pyramid. Like, you can see them looking at him and they're like, quite the presentation. But it was, again, it was structurally sound. And
that counts for a lot.
And apparently fine gingerbread, so.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so bad for Kate, who went to all the trouble to design three different types of gingerbread, and they were like, not great gingerbread.
Oh yeah, that was just straight up inferior bread. And it was like, oh, you went through so much trouble for no reason.
Yeah, and Paul and Mary are complimentary to the biscuit that Louise made. Candace mm-hmm. crushed it.
Oh, and full credit where credit's due. I didn't think she'd be able to pull it off, and she pulled it off beautifully.
And yeah, and then again, Val could have been believable, but Louise was the obvious one.
Oh, yeah, and just that, who wants to eat some carpet?
Yeah, who wants to eat some carpet? I'll eat a bit of carpet.
And you know Mary Berry didn't get it one fucking bit.
No, she did not.
Yeah,
and
my prediction was Candace wins with Andrew a strong second. And I believe that's what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, Candace won. I forget I'm not sure. Candace did win. That part I remember. I don't remember who was the second. Can I say that the first minute that I was like, oh, I like Louise a lot, is after they kicked her off this show. Nobody's ever looked more relaxed and happy in their life.
She doesn't have to deal with being on an incredibly stressful show anymore.
Right. It was like you see somebody who is like in a old timey play who's like following their father into a line of work that they never wanted to do in the first place. And the moment they leave, she's like, I'm free.
It's exactly like that.
So this show, just overall, much more stressful than I anticipated, edited incredibly aggressively. The duo comedy of Sue and
Mel.
Mel is wonderful, even though I'm never going to remember her name. Paul and Mary are both terrifying in their own ways, and I hate them, even in the moments when I like them a lot. Very, very, very much enjoyed this show. Let us know if you want to hear more British, Great British Bake Off. Obviously,
who are your top three?
Okay, so top three, I'm gonna have to go with. Oh, it's really hard actually, because I feel like I have a top four.
Okay, I'm gonna go with my top three.
Go for it.
And this is no particular order yet. I'm going Selassie, Candace, Andrew.
Selassie, even after that abomination of the Viennese Worlds,
still he has shown so much potential and ability with his other bakes that, and plus his unflappable personality has won me over completely.
Yeah, I like him a lot as a person. The Viennese World lowered him to like fourth or fifth in my esteem. Like, he's on the bubble of my top three. But Candace is the clear number one. Andrew, I have to say, because I'm just rooting for him a lot.
Has the ginger blood finally stopped boiling?
I might have to sacrifice myself for him. That's the only way. The only way that I can show that I am a valid redhead in another redhead's eyes. And then number three, yes. There's Selassie, there's Jane. I'm going to say Kate because she's great.
All right. Good choice. Good choice.
And I feel like she's done, like, every event, I feel like she's been very consistent, but she hasn't really excelled yet. I think some of that is just chance. She's always been like fourth or fifth. She's always done very well, but hasn't blown the top off yet. And I think that's coming. And so let us know what you think about it. Let us know in the Patreon comics if you want us to continue the rest of series 7. patreon.com/boarsgoreswords. Thank you guys so much for hitting the goal. We will come up with the next stretch goal. We're gonna try and do smaller goals this time. Either every 50 or 100, and then we'll have like around the thousands be a bigger goal like this one was.
All right. Oh, and tell us if you want us to do this weekly or bi-weekly or whatever the fuck.
Or whatever the fuck. But with that, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Boar Score and Swords. You can find us on Twitter at Boar Score Swords. You can find Ivan on Twitter at Ivan_Hernandez or at Octo_TXT.
Listen, we can't forget Octo_TXT. Mm-mm. And you can find Red on Twitter at Red_Scott.
Bye.
See ya, Patreon.